What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal King Podcast. This is episode number 194. All right, so my guest today is someone I know you're all going to love. This is, he's somebody who grew up from like very, very humble beginnings and, just worked his way up, right? Like a lot of us out here, I know maybe you're looking at, you're in a job now and it's like, how do I make the transition? How do I do it? Well, my guest today is somebody who really went through that. He wasn't born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He just kind of worked through it. And in this episode, he provides a ton of wisdom and insight into how he was able to do it, and also how he's still remained humble through this entire process and still building and growing and now getting to the contribution phase of his life where he's done a lot of awesome things and he's looking to give back. So I know you're going to love this one. Also, guys, if you're out there and you're thinking you're going to munch on some kale or some tofu or, some broccoli and you're going to be big, strong, vibrant, badass person, let's face it, we all know that's not true. Look, I'm not a doctor. I don't even play one on TV. But the reality is that our ancestors were out there hunting animals, eating meat. So what makes you think that you're going to be able to hunt a carrot and somehow be like really awesome? You probably won't. So make sure, go to crossomeats.com, get you a bunch of meat. Again, crossomeats.com. All right, everybody, let's get started. So the question is this: how do we live the best life that we can with the limited amount of time that we get to be here? Is it by accumulating success and fame and fortune and everything else that society tells us that we need in order to be fulfilled? Or is it much more simple than that? My name's Derek Wilson. I'm the host of the Primal King Podcast, and we're going to be answering this as well as many other questions as we move forward. What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal King Podcast. I am super excited for my guest today. This is someone who was born and raised in Alabama and grew up poor. He started off by doing construction work and then took a job with Alabama Power in 2006 when the housing market was starting to go down. Around that time, he started saving money and started a metal fab shop as a side business. He built that business to the point that he was able to quit his job to go full-time in the off-road market. From there, he bought a building that came with a dead business called Brush Monster, which he was able to not just revive, but explode it to a multi-million dollar business. After his success, he is now starting to help others in the coaching and the mentoring space. And obviously, he has the experience and the knowledge to be able to do that. I am very excited to welcome on my guest today, Mr. Tim Meeks. Again, Tim, super excited to have you on board.
Yeah, thank you for getting me on here, buddy.
Yeah. So, obviously, it sounds like you have kind of that story where you didn't maybe grow up with a ton of money. Maybe you didn't, you weren't born with a silver spoon in your mouth. Like, I totally understand that. So I guess maybe just to start with, what was kind of your upbringing like? Like, what was your childhood like?
It was after like five, it was single parent for a long time. And that caused more money problems, splitting up and stuff. But I mean, we always ate. It was none of these stories where like I didn't have food in the cupboard for 3 days, but it was, once my dad got married again, they really budgeted every week. Like, we're going to pay this bill, this bill, this bill. We can afford this much groceries, and we're going to move this credit card, because there's 0% for 6 more months. And then we got to move it. And, we went out to eat, 4 times a year, because for your birthday, that's what you got to do, is go out to eat with the family. And there was 4 of us. So, nice. it was not extravagant, we lived in a single wide trailer, still live in one now, just because we're, my motto is just don't expend the stuff I don't have to spend until I get my business where I want it. So now we're building like a multi-million dollar house, next to that single wide trailer.
Oh, how cool. How cool.
So yeah.
So even to this point, running multiple businesses and doing as well as you are, you're living in a single wide trailer.
That's right. Yeah. It's kind of a little bit sad, really, because I like to use that to show people like, hey, you don't need that house. You don't need that new truck. Like, I'm so much further ahead of you at this point, and not saying they can't catch me, but I still live in a trailer. Like, we don't have I drove the same truck for 10 years, just whatever I could do just to not spend too much money and just dump all that back into my business.
Yeah, no, that's great.
Do you think you learned that because of how you grew up? Like, you know, a lot of people talk about learning the value of a dollar. And maybe if you had grown up upper middle class, something like that, it would just be like easy come, easy go. I mean, do you think that's kind of ingrained from a very young age?
Oh, absolutely. I do think that. So my family is just, we're a bunch of like everybody can build stuff. Like we're just hands on people. Like my grandpa had some patents on diesel truck parts, you know, a long time ago that they don't use now, which he lost those gambling anyway. But I do think that being poor just forced us to make things work. And I think that that converts over to when you're in a business and you're struggling. It's like there was no choice for us. We couldn't just back out and go a different way. We just had to make it happen. You know, I think I was like 15, maybe 14, and we had the nicest car we ever had, which it wasn't nice, but the motor went out. So we went to the junkyard and got one, and we had swapped old truck motors. They're easy, but this was fuel injected and all the things that we didn't know about. So at that age, my dad took the driver's side, I took the passenger side, and we just remember what we did, took it out, put it back in, started out, you know. It ran though. So that's stuff like that through the years, learning that you can't quit and you just got to make it happen. Definitely converted over to being able to just get over those obstacles later on. And I mean, 100%, I appreciate that. I mean, appreciate enough that it's hard for us to raise our kids now. I don't want them to miss on part of that. So we do focus a lot on, we let them know that you're not rich. You don't have any money. Like you are going to struggle, and you're going to learn these lessons that we learned, and we're going to force those lessons upon you instead of, voluntarily, instead of like we had no choice.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think it is? And obviously we'll get more into your story, but I'm always fascinated because statistics would show, and I've talked a lot about this on the podcast over the past couple of years, but statistics would show if you grow up poor, you grow up in a single parent household or your parents are divorced, you grow up with those types of, let's say, disadvantages, right? That more likely than not, you're more likely to get into crime. You're less likely to essentially go to college or graduate or make money, like all of these things. I mean, it really does kind of put you behind the eight ball from a very young age. And that's, again, this isn't victim stuff. This isn't any of that. It's literally statistics. And I know I grew up the same way, right? Like my parents were divorced when I was young. We didn't grow up with very much money at that time. Like we grew up in a very small town. Like it feels like just everything's kind of stacked against you. And somehow, like I've been able to do okay. Obviously you've been able to do okay. Like, what do you think it is that maybe allowed you to get out of that trap that so many other people would have maybe stayed stuck in, that kind of generational poverty maybe, or that generational victim or whatever else can come when you grow up that way?
I think I was pretty lucky that my dad was, he worked a lot, to try to jump ahead, but during like ball season, he was always there. You know, he always coached, he showed up, and just like, it was a good example, even though we just didn't have money. I think in better situations, we would have been more elevated. You just hear a lot of the people have trouble with, a lot of the families that do struggle more of, is there an addiction? Is there gambling? Is there something that's pulling the family down that they brought on themselves? And I do think that we were just presented with a situation that he just got that was just hard, but he pushed through it, and just, there was just not a lot of quit. So I never really had to go through the struggle of like the parent not forming the best they could at a time. So yeah. That was always a good example.
Yeah. And I think that's such an important point too, because it was the same way with my mom. Even with my dad, like they were both very hardworking people, honest. They weren't, cheating and lying and stealing and, abusing or things like that, which I know is really rough. But I look back because I wondered the same thing about myself, in all honesty. It's like, maybe you come to a fork in the road and you went left when you could have went right. And thank God you went left instead of right. Like, why did I go left instead of right? I'm always like, because I know people, right? Like you've probably grown up around people too, that's similar upbringing, maybe similar social status, whatever. And then, you know, 20 years, you look back and it's like, damn, like, bummer how they turned out. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Some of them that was real similar to me went the other way. And then there were some that, you know, did have the struggle. And I think those people that come out of that, I think they're really strong because they have had to overcome those things instead of just, well, we overcome money, but you don't need that to be happy. So mm-hmm. wasn't like nobody was miserable. So I think those people that have the harder struggles that make it out, but I think they just don't get a lot of parental support. And even though we weren't like the close thing where we're, you know, like telling each other we love each other all the time and like, you can do it. You know, there's none of that, but it was just a solid example of just keep going and do the right thing.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and you know, one of the things that I always hope people get, whether they listen to podcast or whatever else, if they're going through hard times, is it's like, you know what, then that's okay. It'll make a great story someday. I like, once you get through it, when you get through it, no matter how hard it is, no matter how horrible it is, like it'll make for a hell of a story and people will want to support you. They'll cheer you on because you got through this. Like, don't use that as a reason to be held down or to be held back. Like, use that as a reason to be like, man, when I do get to, maybe in your case, building that multi-million dollar business, or when I do build this big house, I can be like, you know what? Hell yeah, I did that, but you should have seen where it started. So if I can do it, anybody can do it.
Oh yeah. I agree for sure. Of course, it took me a long time to learn to enjoy the journey, and that's, you know, you're in that saying, oh, this would be a good story, but you don't learn that until you learn that the story is life, because there's been times I've wanted this building and I thought, if I could just get to where I could own a shop like that, my business would be perfect. And then as I'm getting there, and I'm almost there, so I've been miserable to this point. And when I get it, my goal has already moved. So that goal was passed and I'm still terribly, you know, unhappy. But once you learn that is the journey, that is the happiness, to learn to appreciate that, then now bad stuff happens. I'm like, of course I don't love it, but I'm like, just like the first of this year, we was going through sales slow down for a lot of people. So we were struggling. I was like, man, I'm really trying to pay attention to how I'm feeling, how this is affecting us, and I'm going to look at what's going on and how can I fix all the things that are lacking in my business so that when we take back off, we're even more ready, trying to use that to make a better story. When used to, I'd have just been depressed and about the struggle of things not going my way. Now I try to build it in the future to go better once we get back going.
Yeah. And I think it makes so much sense, because the further it seems like you get in any business, you know, because again, like just kind of like you mentioned, I think that so many people have this vision of, once I get to here, everything will be great. Or once I get to there, everything will be great. Once I have that house, once I have that car, once I have the business to $1 million a year, whatever it is, everyone's, you know, or not everyone, but I think a lot of people are like, but then I'll finally be happy. Then I'll finally have made it. And it's so funny, because it is. It's like the old Charlie Brown cartoon where they just pull the football out, you know, every time you go to kick it. It's like, I'm finally going to kick it. Nope, it moved again. Because it is. It's like every time you hit one of those goals, you're like, you know what? That actually didn't make me as happy as what I thought it would. So then it can almost be depressing in the sense of like, well, then what the hell is ever going to make me happy? But like you said, once you understand the happiness is found in the journey, it's found in the work, you know, then when the bad things happen, it's like, it's okay. This is all part of the journey. It's okay. Like it was a while back, and I don't even remember if I talked about this, but like, so we have our direct to consumer meat business here and we ship out beef across the country. And I was out there one day and I was feeding and it was just cold and it was nasty and I was wet and it was just like, this is just stupid, right? Like just sitting out there, just, this is stupid. And then it was like, I had that, like you talked about, it flipped on and it was like, but this is part of it, right? Like, it's okay. It's okay that this sucks. Like, not everything's going to be great about what, you know, we're not going to love every day of building this business. We're not going to love every single component of everything we do. But that's what makes the fun. That's what makes the journey. And sometimes if you can remind yourself of that, it does. It just seems like it changes the whole equation of like where your life is going. Have you kind of noticed that too?
Yeah. And I think Well, first, like one thing about the appreciating like the growth and stuff, I do think that the poor part makes a big deal because most, I'm sure you've read this at some point, as long as you've been doing these podcasts, but the people that are real wealthy that have accomplishments, they don't feel like they did it. You know, like high end families that get help, that can do all this stuff, they just don't feel like they really accomplished it, like someone who had to do it all themselves. So I think that kind of robs them of their fulfillment. But the ups and downs, if everything was perfect all the time, it's kind of like you're like, all right, I'm going to go, I go on one vacation a year. Well, now I'm going to retire and I'm going to go to the beach for life. And then you get there and you realize, I don't even really enjoy the beach anymore because it's nonstop. So your happiness level, you've moved to here where everything's perfect all the time, but it don't feel perfect because you never got to suffer at all. So you don't get the up and down.
Yeah. Well, and you hear the stories all the time, and I've had several people on who have talked about that. You know, they finally get to the point where they've accomplished everything in their life and they're more miserable than what they had ever been before. Because
I questioned that just last year. I was just like, what am I doing? Like, yeah. I've got this. I've amazing life. Kids are great. I'm like, what am I doing now? I'm just sitting here and I'm really not that happy. I mean, we haven't moved into our house yet, but I just don't really even care. Like it's not going to make me happy. The bigger business didn't make me happy. All this cars, trucks, we got a plane, all this stuff. It just doesn't make me happy. So I'm like, what is it? And it's none of those things. It's making it happen. It's progressing up. And that's really why we want to get into like the coaching area is I already do that with people that I know. I've helped them build their business and get set up. And then me and my wife just had so much work to make us working together work out, to make our marriage work. And we've really analyzed a lot of that, and we can help people do that too. You know, that we've done that. So we just want to give back. And I think that's the most joy that I get is helping somebody else succeed. So I think that's, I've got all this to sustain me and I support these families and I love that part of it, but we just want to do, just doing something for other people is a big deal.
Yeah. The contribution side of it for sure. Because, you know, you get to a certain point where you have everything that you want, need. And I feel like that is where a lot of people get very depressed because then it turns into, what am I here for? Was I really just here so I could retire at 45 years old and do whatever I want, you know, have all that freedom? And then you start realizing, you know, you feel like you have no freedom because you're like stuck in this personal prison. You know, and I've always said it and people make fun of me before, but I never want to retire. Like, yeah. I don't know if I want to be doing my current business forever or something else, but I know that I'm not the guy that wants to sit on my rocking chair every day and do nothing. Like, to me, that just sounds so miserable when it comes to like just kind of thinking, you know, whenever I'm done working or whatever, like, I don't want to sit on my rocking chair all day, every day. I don't want to just bother my kids because I have nothing else to do in my life. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I mean, that's always been my thought is like, when I get old, maybe I want to back off a little bit. Maybe I don't want to work so much, so hard, whatever, but I don't want to just like sit around. I mean, do you ever have that feeling as well? Like what comes after the business? Do you want to retire? Like, what are your thoughts around that?
Oh no. So I turned 40 next month and my goal has been, for a while to retire at 40. That's retire. And when I say retire is I wanted to have my business structured where I can leave. I don't have to be here every day making things happen. Oh, like I need to do this. I want them to be self-sufficient and I'll be an operator and just let them handle it. And that way I can operate other things. And to me, retirement is really just enjoying what you're doing. I mean, I don't want to, when I'm 65, I'm just going to have a garden in my backyard. I'm not going to do that. Like,
sounds
terrible. If I can have a garden, I can run a business.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go do the labor part probably, but I can still operate. I can still get things done. So really, you know, everybody's like, what are you going to do for retirement? Because when I quit my job, you know, that would have been a good job to retire from. And my dad at first was like, oh, you should just wait till you retire and then start your business. And I was like, well, that's a life of misery to start a business when I'm old. Cause you know, he's making about 120 a year, you know, 10 years ago when I quit. So that was a lot of money back then. And just walk away from that with no income hardly. Like it was just randomly coming.
Yeah.
So
it's funny because it's so similar to kind of what I did when I walked away from my job, and it was the same thing. Everyone thinks you're crazy. You've got, you know, the big salary, the, you know, the benefits, the retirement, just hold out. It's a great company. And it's like, yeah, but I want to build my own, you know, I want to be able to dictate where this goes, how this goes. So I totally get it, but I am curious because, you know, you did have that good job. What was the process like when you did, you know, like had you always kind of had like the entrepreneurial spirit, do you feel like, or did that maybe develop after you had the confidence of having a higher paying job? Like how did that transition kind of start?
Well, so nobody in my family had went to college. So I was the first one to attempt it. I didn't finish.
Yeah, me either.
But I was making more money doing a regular job because I was doing a business degree, which is a waste of damn money.
Me too.
Because I was, they're like, what do you want to do? I'm like, I mean, I can really just about, I mean, I can build almost anything. So I'm pretty handy. So I was like, my options were large. So it made it harder to pick. Like sometimes I was like, I wish I was just really good at one thing and like doing it. Then I could just go that way. But I never thought I'd run a business. I always thought I was going to be like a number two or a number three because I was skilled at doing things. And I'm like, I could work for somebody who will pay me really well because I can handle, you know, I can develop things, if you know, all this kind of thing. So I started, doing some landscaping on houses. And then the carpenter was like, man, we need somebody to work for us because I'm a hard worker. And so I worked for him. And then the electricians were like, man, we really, you know, if you want a job, you can come over here. So I was like, well, I'll try that out too. So I wired some houses, but I learned to build from the ground up. And I'd kind of considered going into wiring houses myself. I started doing like a little bit of side work. I still probably wouldn't have done. I mean, I kind of had a plan to work for myself at that point, and that was like 23. Once I realized I wasn't going to do college and work for no big business. So from 23 to 30, I worked at Alabama Power. But the first year or two, I wasn't making much money. I was still working on the weekends to get by. But after that, I was like, you know, this is a prison. They pay me just enough that I won't leave. Like it's better than pretty much everybody in my town makes because I traveled, but it's not near enough to be wealthy. So I put a plan together to start saving my money and build my own shop and buy some tools so I could quit with, you know, reoccurring bills for the most part, where I'd have a whole lot better chance of making it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, but even at that point, my plan was to work at my house in my shop and do like high end builds for people, you know, just like me do all the labor and just do really quality work. People pay me really well for that work, which that's not a sustainable plan because I'll get older and it's not sustainable. It's not a wealth plan. It's a nice job for yourself plan that you get to kind of make your own schedule. And really, dude, really, when I got this building, the local guy that owned it, he was just, it was trash. There was stuff everywhere. And he couldn't really sell it without cleaning it out. So he done some metal work, and then somebody, the guy that I done carpentry work for, recommended me to him. He showed up he called me, he said, Wednesday. He's like, hey, come talk to me. He's like, next Friday's my last day here, and I'm shutting it down. He's like, are you interested in it? And I'm like, I have no money, really. You know, I was like, I don't know what I could possibly do. He said, oh, no, just you make the payment. Whatever it's paid down to, you can buy it for when you buy it. And he wanted some money for the tools. He said, whenever you can pay for it, I don't care. And because he's rich, he didn't care. And I kept his workers, and I had tons of time cleaning this place up. but the Brush Monster business that we had was just dead. I mean, there was nothing in there. They were really just doing like handyman jobs, like weld this lawnmower, fix this trailer, stuff like that. So it was kind of like thrown on me and I was forced into that situation, but it was, the best thing obviously that happened because I was at home working by myself and now I've got employees overnight, like literally within a week and a half, I had employees, like four employees. So that was like a slap in the face, turnaround.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So then you take that, you take that business over. And were you instantly like, I've got to grow it, I've got to do all this stuff? Or was it like, I just got to figure out how to pay the bills? I mean,
I was just like, I just got to work. Yeah. So I had a welder and he wasn't a great welder, but he could build those. He had been building them for years. He actually designed the first brush cutter for a skid steer in the 90s. He was the first one to do it. Should be rich, but drinking and all this other, mm-hmm. So I kept him on to do that, and I kept doing all the off-road stuff because I could weld a lot better.
So you took like cages for side-by-side stuff like that?
And like I was building off-road truck bumpers and putting lift kits on, all that stuff. So I kept doing all that, and I was cutting parts because I had CNC table. They didn't really have no equipment to speak of. They had a press brake that was old. So I just kept him busy. So really for 2 years, 16. Yeah. So like, from 16 to 18, I really just worked. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know how to set up an office. I didn't know I wasn't tracking jobs. I wasn't, finding work. I was just struggling to pay bills. And I just got to looking around. I was like, man, this is not going to work. And I tried to hire like some of these young guys with no experience, but I didn't have time to train them. So it was the wrong people to hire. And so one day I finally hired somebody that could weld better than me, paid him more than I paid anybody by far. And I was like, this is scary. Cause I was like, you're going to take all my money that I'm even making. And that's when I figured out that I need to hire the right employee that can take, I need to fire myself. I couldn't be the welder. So I fired myself from being a welder. Now he welds everything. And that freed me up to start, building new things and just give me about 3/4 of my day back. And so we kept on. I was like, these cutters, we sell a few of them here and there and they would be pretty good, but they're dated. They're built with Chinese parts. There's a pretty good reputation on them already. Like they had a good customer base sort of, they just weren't, they were bottom, more like less than halfway up the value, but they were priced accordingly. So they was fine. But I was like, if I really just redesign this whole process, I ran them, everything I didn't like, I redesigned to be more efficient, to hold up better. And I checked out all the competition. I was like, it's got to be better than everything they're making. So I bought the best motors and all the stuff. And we're talking about somebody that didn't really have any money having to hustle to build up a couple $100,000 to keep inventory over like a year. It was rough. But once,
how'd you do it? Did you go like the credit route or just no, super just frugal?
Hustling. Yeah. Just staying tight. I've never had a house payment, all that stuff. The building was pretty cheap and, I try to pay for equipment as I get it. So that and just, I worked nonstop, nights, weekends. I just didn't quit because I was trying to build that up. And I was, I was trying to get these better prices on these motors and stuff. And I'm like, can I buy 10? They're like, well, that's really not how many we sell. And I'm like, can I buy 10 the first time to try them out? I just want to try them out,
Yeah.
Really, I just could afford 10. So, we just, we fought that and that was about the time I got married. So she started helping taking some of that load off of me too. And we, once we got that design built though, with those motors and started just getting them out there, they really took off because we really do have, I know it's mine, but it's the best one out there. Mm-hmm. It's built really well. We we over deliver. People get them. Like we sold one yesterday. He's like, he texts us because we pretty much ship them all out. Mm-hmm. And he's like, man, this thing is built extremely well. Because most, if you're in the implement world, they're garbage for the most. They look bad. The welds are bad. But everything we do is super high end. So that's the customer base I wanted. Once I realized that I need a quality product that's repetitious, that we can make enough markup on to support our customers and support warranties without panicking and getting that high-end customer base, because they're just paid. People call me and they'll spend $16,000 on a cutter. They didn't even look at it. They're just like, what's the best one? And I tell them, they're like, I'll send you a check tomorrow. Just send my people a invoice. You know, they don't even care. But when it's $4,000, the people are panicking. They're like, this is the most money I've ever spent, you know, besides like a car or a house. And they're, and I mean, I was that person. I get it. I'm not hating on them. I just, that's not the customer I want. I didn't want me as a customer then either.
Yep.
Because they are like, they're struggling. The 4,000 means so much to them that if it don't work, they're going to go under. And these rich people, you know, they're just like, I don't care. I mean, it's they're already making money. So what they're buying is an added value. You know, once you got your business supported, anything else you add is just a little profit here and a little profit here. And these people, usually the smaller customers are trying to make a living off of it. And so it means so much more to them. Mm-hmm. It's harder to be that value because they're so worried.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I spent, you know, and have spent over the years a lot of time, you know, like my job that I did walk away from, 6 years ago now, whenever it was, that's a big part of what I did is I sold essentially mastermind packages, coaching packages. And it was fascinating because when we very first started selling these coaching programs, they were like $5,000. And it was, you know, it seemed like some of the people that you would bring into the program, that $5,000 was, it's like, if this doesn't work, I'm going to go under, I'm going to go bankrupt, right? And it was horrible selling it because it's like, you know, at the end of the day, you're investing $5,000 to try to get a business going. It's not very much, like relative to most other businesses. So don't think that this is going to change everything. This is going to be education. It's going to help you. Ultimately, it's up to you. But it seemed like the people who were only willing to invest $5,000 just didn't quite understand that. We ended up getting to the point, you know, where that company grew, ended up being, you know, close to a $1 billion business. And then people wanted to work with my boss more. And so the price to work with him just kept getting higher and higher and higher until ultimately it was $50,000 for the same mastermind that a few years previous was selling for like $12,000 for this mastermind. You know, they'd meet up like four times a year, talk business strategy, blah, blah, blah. But the fascinating thing was, is that it was way harder selling that at $5,000 than it was at 50. And I know people are like, there's no way that it's 100% true. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
Because the people who invest $50,000, they understand it takes money to make money, right? And the people who invest $5,000, and again, like you said, nothing against it. It's just a different mindset. It's a different mentality to where that $5,000 needs to change my life or else I'm going to be, you know, this is a scam or whatever. Somebody else will invest 50 and get one idea, turn that into $1 million. And they're like, this is the best money I've ever invested in my life.
Right. Because the problem, you're hiring a coach or a mastermind thing, you're hiring them because there's something you don't know. Like you're doing good usually.
Yep.
And a lot of times I've just been like, oh, well, this is the most common shit that you could have told me. You didn't tell me anything special, but I didn't really expect you to. I just expect you to look at me and see your failures and be able to point them out.
Yep.
So the $5,000 guy, he's got the same failures as the $50,000 guy. He just can't turn those failures into $100,000 at yet. But
yeah.
The $50,000 guy, he's like, oh, damn, that's what I've been doing. You're right. And he can immediately change something to make him a lot more money.
Well, we used to joke a little bit about it as, you know, as you'd kind of work with some of these individuals and be like, you know, you get paid all this money to basically just confirm what people already know to be true. You know, because it's exactly. Like people will come to you and be like, you know, I've been thinking about doing this. And it's like, yeah, that's a great idea. And then they go do it and they make a bunch of money and it's, oh my gosh, thank you. You changed my life. It's like, no, it was your idea. You just needed somebody who you respected to bounce the idea off of and have the confidence to go and do it. You could have done that without us. I mean, yes, like we can help you and everything else, but it is kind of interesting how that works.
Well, I think a lot of times, like, so if I didn't, I never heard of anybody, any of these influential people, any of this mindset stuff till probably 2019. Mm-hmm. So I spent those first years, and not 19 was not, it was like 21 is when I started getting involved in that area. But 17, 18, I was so stressed out and such in a hole that I couldn't see out of it. And if I'd have been smart enough to pay somebody $5,000 I didn't have, they could have just looked at me and been like, dude, what are you doing? This is it. This is what you should be doing. I'd have been like, God, because I couldn't see. Because it was me in the problem. It's kind of like when you're dating that girl and you're like, everybody's like, man, he don't need to do that. But you don't see it because it's you.
Too close to it.
You need somebody to say it.
Yeah.
And that's all it takes. Or just to reassure you just enough to just go do it.
Yeah. No, and that's why I've always been such a big advocate for, you know, for like a mastermind of some sort where you can meet up and learn from other people or some type of coaching or mentoring. I mean, it's awesome that you're getting into that and that you're going to be able to help people because of that exact reason, right? It's half of the time I feel like when you get a really good coach or a mentor, they're essentially just holding the mirror up to you and showing you what's really going on. Because again, like we all have ego. We all have, you know, stories in our own brain about what's happening or why things aren't working. But then when you can kind of get that outside view and have somebody be like, actually, dude, like you're doing things all messed up right now because you have this story or this belief. And if you would just maybe change a little bit, then a light bulb comes on and, like, you know, we would see that time and time again after working with people.
Yeah. And I think it does help that we have had to struggle completely from bottom to the top. Like, I think that helps me be able to coach somebody better because I can look at them and be like, yeah, I remember when it was like that and it was terrible. And I had no help. So I just had to struggle through it completely. And if I'd have hired somebody, which I would wish I would have in some ways, because I probably would be further along, but they would have helped me get out of it too. I think I can just recognize a lot more struggle because I feel like I've been through every stage of struggle from, you know, family, not, you know, I never had nobody saying you ain't going to make it. That's never had that problem. But I did have a lot of people being like, you sure you want to make those moves? You know, are you sure? And then after I made those moves and everybody quit asking me because they quit doubting me, like four of my family members have businesses now that are all older than me because they're like, man, if you quit your $100,000 a year job to come do this, I'm only making $15 an hour. Why haven't I quit? And so then they did, and now they're making money, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it's a huge, because, and that's what I realized, you know, growing up in a small town and, you know, we ended up moving back to this small town. But what you realize is so often you just need somebody to do it in order for everybody else to understand that it's possible, right? Like locally here, there's a kid who made it to the NFL from our, so I live in this, in central Idaho, town of 400 people. And we had a kid here, Leighton Vanderish, who made it to the NFL from this town. He played high school ball here, went to Boise State, just, you know, a couple hours down the road. And once he did that, now all the little kids, you know, my son included, they're all like, yeah, you can go to high school here and go to the NFL. Now, again, do they know the odds are like one in a million probably for that to ever happen again? But at the same time, like, once you see somebody who you connect with do that, it changes everything. Cause you're like, okay, I know that guy. He's not superhuman. He's not, you know, he didn't grow up with $1 million family, what do they call it? Trust fund. It's like, he's a normal guy and he went and did it. And it's like a normal guy. He went and made it to the NFL. And so I think that's why it becomes almost like a duty if you've had success. And again, like for me, it's been a podcast. For you, I know you're going to do the podcast and the coaching and mentoring, but I'm really excited for you as you get further into your podcast and everything else to see how much happiness that creates for you. Because I really think that it will create a ton of happiness because now you're able to get that wisdom out there and share it with the world. And, you know, you'll get the messages and like, I always love it when people message me. It's like, oh my gosh, thank you for this or help me through that. Or, you know, and it's, you know, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, that is the good stuff. You know, that is all the crap, all the different shit that I went through to get here. If it helps one other person, and I'll tell you this real quick and then we'll kind of move on. But so I started a podcast years ago. And then I did like 5 episodes and I had this company, I hired an outside company to produce it and edit it and do all this stuff. And it was terrible, right? It was terrible. I was terrible. I shouldn't say. And then they kind of like their company disbanded. But funny thing is I released the first episode and then the second episode. And I think between the 2 episodes, I had like 6 downloads, right? Like
yeah.
6, 4, maybe. It was basically like probably some random person accidentally clicked on it. Right. And, but the company that I was working with to do it, I was like, dude, this is stupid. Like, I'm putting out this money for this podcast and literally no one is listening to it. And he said something that completely changed it. He said, well, let me ask you this. Maybe you had 4 downloads, but what if one of those people's lives were changed by your podcast? Would it be worth it? And I was like, huh? Because I went from like victim, like poor me, no one's listening to my podcast, to like, okay, what if one person does like connect with my story at some weird deep level and they're inspired or motivated by it and they go out there and they do something, would it be worth it? And then the answer to that was yes. And so that's when I restarted it shortly after that. And so like, I think you'll see the same thing. Obviously you've got a big name and you've got a lot of people who trust you already. And so, yeah, I'm definitely excited to see you jump into this.
Well, I think, one, I used to think that people that did that, I was like, are y'all scamming us? Or why are you helping? Like, is your business not doing well? You know, cause you're asking for money from me.
There's a lot of those too, though. There are a lot of those out there.
Well, but one thing I have learned that it can't be free. Like you can tell them, like, we'll make video and you can put a video and you can tell everything for free in a video and that's fine. But you can't do the job for free because they will not, they won't take it serious if they don't pay.
Yeah, those who pay attention.
And it's got to be enough that it hurts a little bit for most of them to pay. That's why I like your ex-boss. He had to keep going up, one, because his time become more valuable. But also, if they're paying 50 grand and don't care, it's got to be 50 grand. Because if it was 5, they really wouldn't care.
Yep.
Like, they wouldn't even really pay attention. It needs to be enough money to make you, you know, be like, I really should put at least enough effort in that I get some return out of that money.
Yeah.
And
100%.
And most people don't realize that it can't be free.
Yeah. So I got to ask you, with all the cool, like side by side stuff and everything else you do, what all do you have going on there? I'm curious, like, what all do you guys build out? What's like the most popular stuff that you're doing there? I saw some of your videos. But yeah, like what all do you do on that side of the business?
Well, so when we got Brush Monster really starting to grow it, I couldn't do both. So we kind of shut it down for a couple years. But we were building full custom race chassis. So for the off-road razor racing and stuff, we'd build full chassis and they would do hill racing. You know, there's a bunch of those videos out there. And I started where we put on events. I would go run these events for people and I enjoy doing that. I'll go MC the events and lay the tracks out and all that stuff. But we did 2 charity builds a couple years ago where we sold entries and somebody would win it. And dude, we just loved seeing somebody win that. Yeah. So we went and met with the Diesel Brothers a couple years ago and how they do their giveaway stuff. So we're actually building one now that we're going to start putting out, hopefully June, July will be our first one. And we'll sell side-by-side parts and shirts and stuff. But we're just going to build badass razor buggies and let somebody take that with them, you know, for spending money they was already going to spend on parts or buying shirts or something. We just like that giving to somebody who probably couldn't either afford it or wouldn't spend it, you know, something they really couldn't spend money on. Because it's kind of a rare commodity because they're all custom built. Can't just go buy one. That's really the main thing we like to do. But we do like to go. We've got a rig that hauls all our stuff. We like to go to events, but it's hard to make time to go to those. But we do have one. We've got a couple, and then our son's got one that he likes to ride around, which it needs a motor, so we got to get that fixed for him to go hit some races up.
Nice. Is there a lot of good places to like razor ride down there?
There's a few places close by. I'm not so apt on hitting all the wild stuff anymore because it hurts in the morning and tired of fixing it. So yeah. I don't do the wild racing no more.
Yeah.
It was fun though.
I rolled mine once and I remember fixing it and being like, all right, I'm not doing that anymore. I don't care. You guys can say I drive like a sissy or whatever you want to say. Like, it's too stupid to fix all the plastic parts on those things. You know, it's not.
Well, I don't know if you keep up with it that much, but you see what they released today. Polaris finally released their Expedition.
Oh,
it's like the Ranger, but it's a Jeep. It's like a hatchback.
Fully enclosed.
Glass. Yeah. Fully enclosed, full glass. I mean, it literally looks like a Jeep.
Oh, wow.
And so me and the wife's been teasing back and forth that we're ordering this and which color we're getting because that air conditioner comes more appealing all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. See, the problem that we have out here, at least like on our ranch and stuff, is that so it's super steep and there's a lot of trees. And so for a long time, I had just a little trail, you know, because it was only 50 inches wide and you could get in between everything here.
Oh, yeah.
And now I have the Can-Am Commander and it's, I want to say 62 inches wide. And there's like a lot of stuff to where it's like, I can't really fit through there. And so I don't love the little teeny size of like the trails, the old school trails. But honestly, that thing could kind of get me anywhere because I would love to have a big enclosed one. But yeah. I couldn't get anywhere out here, like in our mountains, because it's steep and the trails are small and stuff. But I've always like seen people with those. Like, how nice would it be to have an enclosed and have an heater and an AC? But it's like, I wouldn't be able to go anywhere. So I might as well just drive my truck at that point.
Well, we live at the bottom of like the Appalachian Mountains. So we're in Alabama, but we're at the very top corner.
Okay.
Where it's still mountains and it's full forest. So, but the off-road parks, they try to widen those pretty good.
Okay. Where
you can fit through there. There's some trails that are sketchy that they're trying to keep you on the cliff. But for the most part, you can't really pass. Somebody can pull over and you can pass, you know, if you're coming at each other, but it's not terrible.
Nice. Nice. So with even on like the Brush Monster side, like if people did want to support you there, obviously I think most people probably actually understand what you do with Brush Monster, but maybe for those who don't, obviously you talked about the attachment for like the skid steer and stuff, but if someone's like, what is that? How's the best way you can explain kind of what you guys do on that side?
So it's a brush cutter, you know, like rotary mower, goes on the front of skid steers or on excavators. And really what breaks us out from everybody else is we have blades on it. Like you would like a bush hog sword on a tractor. We do have forestry teeth on the bottom, helps, you know, cut everything up more. And we just put these high-end motors, and you're not just paying for what's a nice motor, but it will put out twice the power that the cheap ones will, and it keeps your power curve all the way to your skid steer bypasses instead of losing power the thicker you get. Most of them is kind of downhill curve to them, and ours stays steady the whole time. So it's all about production, you know, twice the production for the same amount of time. It's money. It don't take that long to make that money back.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
But we do got our website at brushmonster.com, Brush Monster Industrial on Facebook. And very if cool. They want to check out the off-road stuff, that's under Rocky Hollow Metal on Facebook.
Perfect.
So we're going to hit that up pretty soon with the full announcements about all we got going on. We're finishing a few things on it to get it looking more complete before we start posting it.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. And then before we kind of get into the end here, where can people find you if they just want to see what's going on in your world, be able to check out everything you got going on, maybe check out your house if you show that here whenever that's done? Where do they find you?
Oh, yeah, we got house videos up. On Instagram, it's TK Meeks, M-E-E-K-S, and TikTok also. We got a bunch of videos on TikTok of the house and stuff. And that's another thing that makes it hard about making videos, getting into something new. It's like I'm starting over because, like TikTok, we got a pretty good bit of followers from the house videos, and my wife's funny, so they get good. But now we're making videos that's not with that. And instead of getting a million and a half views, so that's kind of like a kills your pride some. But I know, like you said, like the one person. Like sometimes I'll post something and one person will message me like, man, that helps so much. And And if you know, I think starting out small is the only way to go, because if you get to appreciating that one person when you are reaching a lot of people, like you, I think it helps ground you from the start, like teaches you the numbers don't matter.
Yeah.
Because you have no numbers. So yeah. If you're making changes now, then when you get the numbers, the more you get a change.
Yeah. No, I love it. So make sure you guys check him out. TK Meeks on Instagram, on TikTok. Guys, go out. If you need any type of accessory, like the Brush Monster, obviously, it's the best that's out there. And you guys can follow Tim there on those different spots on social. So obviously with the podcast, it's kind of, you know, we have the three pillars here: liberation, more of the mindset. Obviously we got to talk a lot about that, which is great. Kind of how you grew up, how you got through all this stuff, why you are where you are. You know, liberation around the lifestyle around the, just kind of the way you're living now and the way that you have everything set up, which is awesome to hear. But the last question is, you know, you've done all these things and you've been able to work hard and you've gotten to this point in your life. I guess maybe when we get down the road from here, and hopefully you've accomplished a lot more of what you want to do, what is it, I guess, that you want to look back, Tim, and that you want your legacy to be when it does come that time?
Nothing crazy. I just like to know that I've kind of turned my mindset stuff around and start helping people when my kids were young enough. I don't lose too much of that because I lost a lot of years with them. I just want to look back and see before I'm at that regret age that I spent the time with my kids. I took my wife on the trips that we wanted to go on, you know, spent time with her. And really just the people that we help. Like I am proud. Like I could stop and not care really. But I work for the families that we provide for, and I like seeing the different things we provide for them. And they can work somewhere else, but we have a great work environment. They all like coming here. It's just a good place to work. And I like that I provided that part for them through these years, and really just the people that we've helped. And the businesses they've started and the families they've helped. And, you know, that's really what we enjoy looking back on now. So I'm sure that's not going to change a lot. We just hope to hit a lot bigger scale of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what cooler thing can you do than not just have impact on the people that are working, you know, kind of with you or for you, but also seeing that kind of splinter even further on below that. I mean, it's a pretty damn good legacy.
Yeah, I'd be happy with that for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, again, guys, make sure you go out there, find Tim on social, check out the websites, make sure you guys support Tim in any way that you can. Obviously he's a great guy. And again, Tim, I appreciate you coming on, man. It was a lot of fun. We'll have to do it again sometime.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it, buddy.
I absolutely love having you as a listener of the Primal King podcast. If you don't want to miss out on the great content, then it's time to hit that subscribe button right now. Do not be left behind. And then share your thoughts and feedback with a written review of the show. I read every single one of these, and it helps me make sure I am serving you best. It also allows others to find this content, and it builds this community. Make it an awesome day, and we'll see you next time.